Welcome to Ever Beyond, Beyond, on Wolf Spirit Radio and everbeyond.info. We go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, 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 beyond. It's the end of June 2013, June the 30th, 2013. This is Ever Beyond on Wolf Spirit Radio, No Borders Radio, and everbeyond.info. It's good to have you all here. We're in the midst of a series of conversations. Well, it's one large conversation. Broken up into several pieces to make it easily digestible, and I've certainly been replaying some of the previous parts, you know, just like to kind of bring it all together for people, and people have been downloading it and looking at that. So it's all very current what you're talking about. Let me just introduce the guest. Tonight, my guest, once again, is Gordon James Gianinotto, who is from the Northeast Atlantic area of America, a mountain somewhere in Maine. Let's let that remain a mystery. So, here we are. Good afternoon, Gordon.
Good evening, sir, and it's a pleasure to be on the radio again with you.
Pleasure to have you.
So, I would like to really thank Wolf Spirit for doing this, because I like to do a little ad for them, because this is the kind of radio that you cannot get anywhere else. And it does not happen because of some large foundation funding it. It happens because people donate money. And that's what you have to do. No matter how little or how large the amount, you've got to donate if you want to see this continue. That's how important it is. And also, I always feel that it's very important that you tell your friends, listen, I'm hearing stuff on this program that I would never hear anywhere else. And you've got to get people interested in it and share this with them. And then maybe we'll have more supporters. So for that, I thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I ought to clip those out and put some music behind them.
Well, you can.
So,
you sure can. I had left off last week with, I'd reached a point where I was going to go through a whole series of things that indicate we're at the end of an age, we're about to have huge changes, and there's all kinds of proof all around you, and you just don't hear this stuff. You might hear a little piece of it here or there, but you never really get it put together as one giant picture, and that's what I'm going to do for you today.
Well, that's great. I was just about to roll a quick summary off, and then you did it. But we were talking about Planet X, and it was kind of bobbling around in some sort of cup-like magnetic bubble. One of the things that has happened in the last couple of years is that love, and I thought it was Japan actually, because I've got a link to it on my homepage, and it's no longer there. The lovely little diagram that gives you an animated look of what the Earth's magnetosphere looks like, which at certain points did some odd things, and then suddenly it went offline. What's the backstory on that?
Well, as you know, when you try and look at a magnetic field, you cannot see it with your eyes. If you have a small magnet and you put it on the table and you put a piece of typing paper over it and then you sprinkle some metal filings, you'll see it. But the United States government has plenty of satellites that can see the magnetic lines of force and register it, and it was all fed to a supercomputer in Japan on a website called NICT, N-I-C-T, is the site that sponsored it, and they used a supercomputer, and they did a diagram, and it showed a side view of the Earth's magnetic field and a top view. And then all of a sudden, something so unprecedented and strange that it's never before happened and could never happen again, and it has to speak very strongly of the intervention of extraterrestrials, happened last March. So first of all, to understand what the normal magnetosphere looked like, as you can picture, the Earth is like a tennis ball. And you imagine that you drill a hole in the top center and the bottom center, and you put some wires in there. And the bottom and the top. And the wires bend over and come out the top and go back in the bottom. So if you're looking at the Earth from above, it actually looks like a donut when you're looking at the magnetic field. It's a toroid, which is the scientific name for that shape. And the lines of force from the magnetic North Pole come out, bend around the surface of the Earth, and then go back in the South Pole. And they go up out into space quite a distance, and then they come back in the South Pole. So that's the way it's always been. But you put the Earth in front of the Sun, and everybody's heard of the solar wind. So the solar wind blows at the Earth in such a way that the magnetic lines of force, because the solar wind is actually a stream of electrons, and the magnetic lines of force is actually a stream of electrons. So the solar wind blows the magnetic lines off to the side, away from the Sun, back into a point like a teardrop. So when you look at the magnetic field of the Earth, you see that it's compressed on the side of the Earth towards the Sun, and then it stretches out 10 times the diameter of the Earth off to the right, because that's how they showed it in the diagram. The Sun was to the left, the Earth is in the middle, and the magnetic field goes way off to the right. And then they colored the lines from the coming out of the North Pole blue, so they look like actually hairs or thin wires, and there were many of them, you know, clusters of them. And they'd come out, and they'd go off to the right and reach a point, and then they turn red and then go back down towards the bottom of the Earth and go in the South Pole. So this is the normal setup until Planet X came into the solar system. Now, Planet X came into the solar system seen from above going clockwise, and the Earth is trying to go counterclockwise, and they're both sort of at a standstill because gravity pushes. So as it came in, and it's laying on its side, so its North Pole is not pointed up, it's pointed straight ahead. So it came in on its side, and as it approached the Sun, it agitated the core of the Sun, and so during a time the Sun was supposed to be very quiet, it was extremely active with flares and all kinds of disturbances. And then when it passed the Sun, the South Pole of Planet X faced the Sun, and all that extra electrons and energy that was disturbing the Sun all of a sudden got sucked up into the South Pole of Planet X, which quieted the Sun remarkably at exactly the time it was supposed to be the most active. All of a sudden, it's setting new records for being quiet. So this, of course, the solar cycles are well known for thousands of years using ice cores and tree rings and things like that. So this was a major effect that was not anticipated by scientists. They're saying, well, we're going to have this this quiet period of 11 years, and as Planet X came in, every day set a new record of eruptions, and then when it passed the Sun, all of a sudden it was supposed to be the most active phase ever, sort of like on a full moon, the high tide on a full moon, it comes in extra high and goes out extra far. So that's the kind of major cycle we're supposed to be in with the Sun. And as soon as Planet X passed the Sun and the South Pole was pointed towards the Sun, it sucked up all this disturbance. And now the Sun, which is supposed to be very active, is quiet. At the same time, you can imagine that a planet that has four times the size of Earth with 23 times the magnetic field has huge lines of blue hair coming out of its North Pole going back to its South Pole. So, of course, the satellite from Earth that the United States portrayed on the nicked site never showed Planet X. But what was interesting is that now that Planet X moved from just coming around the sun to being in between the sun. So as I said, the Earth to the sun is 93 million miles, and Planet X is off to the side. So if you drew a straight line from the center of the Earth to the center of the sun, you will not intersect Planet X. It's off to the side as seen from Earth in the northern hemisphere. It's at the 5 o'clock position, or in the southern hemisphere, it's at the 10 o'clock position. But nevertheless, the lines of magnetic force coming off of Planet X were coming around and going into the south pole of Earth. And the lines of magnetic force from the north pole of Earth were going around to the south pole of Planet X. But of course, the U.S. government couldn't show you that. So that was never on there. But what was on there was the equivalent of a bad hair day. In other words, the lines of force from the magnetic pole of Earth should go up and then back in this teardrop shape away from the sun, and then come back, sneaking back to the bottom, the south pole of the Earth. But instead, the magnetic lines from the north pole of Earth were going off in space towards the sun. Now, how could that happen if the solar wind is blowing it back? You go off towards the sun, go in the south pole of Planet X, come out the north pole of Planet X, and go from the north pole of Planet X back to the south pole of Earth. So these diagrams got increasingly wilder and wilder and wilder. In other words, on a normal Earth-Sun magnetosphere view, it should look like there's the sun on the left, there's the Earth, and then there's these blue and red lines go off from the Earth to reach a point in this teardrop shape, away from the sun, off to the right. But instead, the red and the blue lines were heading towards the sun. Well, how can that happen with the solar wind unless there's a planet in between the Earth and the sun to cause that, which is exactly what I'm saying. Now, I sent you a few pictures for you to post on your blog, and I'm going to continue to send more pictures this week until you have an amazing set of these pictures. But if you look at it, you'll see that it's impossible. And I'll just give you another analogy. Imagine that there's a fast-moving stream is running downhill between your feet. So you have 1 foot on either side of it. You're looking down, and there is a fast-moving stream. And imagine that from the height of you standing up, you pour some really strong-colored dye into the stream, and the dye, instead of going swiftly downstream, goes off to the sides. Well, that's what the magnetosphere looked like. And all of that was going on, and that was a lot of things. Now, Nancy Leader of Zeta Talk said that this was in response to a question asked by the public. The Zetas replied that the Council of Worlds said unless the president announces that there's a rogue planet and there's going to be pole shift, some incredible things are going to happen to shock the whole world. And on March 23rd of 2012, that's what happened. Something that's so incredible that no scientist who's ever studied the magnetosphere can ever explain it. And what that was on March 23rd, for a period of hours, all of a sudden, the magnetic field of the Earth trailed off back towards the sun. Just in a teardrop shape, which, if you think about it, how could the magnetic field go towards the sun if the sun is a huge source of the solar wind blowing it away? So this would be like standing in front of a fan, and all of a sudden, and the fan is blowing a 100 mile an hour wind at your head, and your hair is trailing behind you, and all of a sudden, one day in March of 2012, all of a sudden, while you're standing in front of the fan with the wind blowing towards you, all of a sudden your hair trails back towards the fan. That's what happened that day. And it was so remarkable, and it lasted for hours. Now, what this means is that somewhere in space on the other side of Earth had to be a source of electrons that was, if it was just equal to the solar wind, then the solar wind, it would be like still, because the wind coming off the fan would hit your face, and then there'd be a fan behind you of equal force hitting the back of your head, your hair would not be trailing behind you, nor would it be blowing in front of you. But imagine that there's such a huge source of electrons behind you in space, blowing such a big fan, that even though there's a really big fan in front of you, there's a fan at least double the speed behind you, blowing all your hair towards the first fan. That's what happened. And that was interpreted by the Zetas and by other people. First of all, the scientists were flabbergasted. What would create a huge source of electrons on the other side of the Earth? Now remember, the Sun and Planet X are on the same side of Earth. The Earth is still rotating, but they're relatively next to each other. So what would be behind the Earth? Well, there is nothing, absolutely nothing. So is this a proof that extraterrestrials, just to show off what they can do, created a huge flow of electrons as if there were a giant star on the other side of Earth blowing a solar wind towards the Sun with such power that the solar wind from the Earth, from the Sun was completely overcome for a series of hours? And that was on March 23rd of 2012, and that was recorded, and I have the pictures of that, and I'm going to send them to you, and they will be posted on your Ever Beyond blog.
So Gordon, you're saying this could possibly be an ET prank?
Exactly. This is something, and the scientists, it was bad enough to see the lines of magnetic force from the Earth go towards the Sun anyway, but to see them completely, the solar winds stop completely, and all the lines of force trail in a teardrop shape towards the Sun, that just blew. And see, this is the kind of thing that's going on. This went above everybody's head. First of all, most people on Earth don't even understand what goes on with the magnetosphere, and they certainly weren't paying attention to it. So this was something that a couple thousand people on Earth have been following, and most people don't understand it and weren't interested in it.
Yeah, and I was among them. I have, like, I would regularly check this little site, and I remember this kind of, ooh, that's interesting. I don't know what it means, but that looks interesting. So you're telling the backstory of something I've experienced again. Very interesting.
Well, I'm glad you were paying such attention, because most people weren't. So my explanation of it right now is probably the first time anybody's ever heard of this. But the thing is that it was real. It was recorded by these satellites that read the magnetic field. It was immediately posted, you know, automatically on the internet, and there it was. The solar wind stopped, and there was a force big enough behind the Earth to stop the solar wind with its own solar wind, and nobody ever saw or heard anything. It's like a mob killing, you know, like when the police show up and goes, I don't know, I didn't see anything, you know. So anyway, you can imagine the stir that caused in NASA, which has for so long tried to cover this up. All of a sudden, this is slowly filtering out. That's something absolutely incredible that can only be explained with extraterrestrials. Happened on March 23rd, 2012. The thing is that not only has NASA and the government been trying to cover up Planet X, but you can bet they're still covering up UFOs and extraterrestrials. See, here was an event which, if you ask me, it was pretty clever from, you know, the extraterrestrial point of view, because here was something that clearly said not only is there a planet in between the Earth and the Sun that's been disturbing the field for years, but here are extraterrestrials. Because how else are you going to explain it? So you can imagine what happened the next time that NASA had a board meeting in May and discussed what had happened in March. Now, this was March 23rd. The board meeting was the beginning of May. And then all of a sudden, about in the middle of May, the Nix site went down. And like you said, it was located in Japan. And if you went to the website, it's got Japanese characters on the screen and a little bit of English that says, we're sorry. And then NASA issued an explanation. Oh, the lease on the supercomputer we were using ran out. And wouldn't you know it, there's no other supercomputer available, so sorry, there won't be any more magnetosphere information.
I write, as they say here.
So that is not just proof of Planet X, because the proof of Planet X was the magnetosphere all along, showing that the Earth was having a bad hair day. How could you pour dye into a fast-moving stream between your legs? You're standing over it, you pour dye into a fast-moving stream, and the dye is going to the left and the right. It should just all go downstream instantly. But imagine that one day while you're doing that, all of a sudden the dye goes upstream. Because the solar wind never stopped. The Earth, the sun didn't fail. It didn't go away. So somehow there was a force that was equal or twice the power of the stream blowing the dye back upstream. That's how remarkable this was. And unless you believe in extraterrestrial intervention, there is no explanation for that.
Right, so I'm looking here at the chat room here, and Norma's got a very good question, which sure. I've just seen a photo, one of the photos in the collection, that refers to it. So the question here is, if the Earth has stopped moving in its orbit, how do we continue to experience the changes of the seasons, as in the short hours at the winter solstice and the long hours at the summer solstice, which I do continue to observe on a regular basis at about the expected times in the calendars?
That's an excellent question. Who asked that?
This is Free Sovereign. That's Norm. He asks good questions. He's very astute.
It's a very good question, and that by itself is indicative of extraterrestrial intervention, because that was asked to Nancy Leader, who put that telepathically to the Zetas, who telepathically answered, and she wrote it out, and you can find the answer to that on the ZetaTalk.com website. And they have an excellent internal Google search engine, and you can do all kinds of searches. As I've said, there were 39,000 pages of questions and answers and diagrams and photographs on that website, and you can do a search and you can read the explanation for yourself. However, what the explanation is that were it not for extraterrestrial intervention causing these changes, all life on Earth would die. And so what they have done is, even though the Earth is not moving around the Sun in its normal orbit, and Venus and the Earth are maintaining pretty much the same distance apart, they're doing a little bobbing and weaving, but they're still pretty much the same distance apart, and the dark twin of Earth has caught up, so there are these three planets bobbing and weaving, trying to go counterclockwise, and Planet X is trying to go clockwise, and none of them are moving. In the process of this, the extraterrestrials said that they will continue to simulate the seasons, but as we get closer and closer to pole shift, the seasons are going to mix, so that you will see rain in the winter and you will see snow in the summer. But that's the only way that they can do it and still have life continue on Earth, because so much of not only the plants are dependent on the seasons for their cycles, but also migrations of animals, and there's all kinds of rhythms that people, human beings, are attuned to, and pets and livestock. So all of this is being maintained artificially in order to simulate the seasons, but they cannot make it the same as if Earth were in its normal orbit and there were normal seasons. But they have said that when pole shift ends, it will be the same as the Earth will be allowed to continue its trip around the Sun as if it were August. So we don't know when pole shift is going to happen, but the Zetas have said that it's either going to happen in April, August, or December, because there are what's called magnetic trimesters, and it will happen in one of those trimesters, because that's when Planet X will be able to make its closest approach and grab the crust and slide it over the north pole of the core, and then drop it as it leaves the solar system going up. So it's a little bit below the ecliptic. It's going to grab the crust, slide it over the north pole of the core, and then leave. And these magnetic trimesters are periods during which it's like a neutral timeout, and that's when Planet X is going to slide in. So we do know that when pole shift occurs, that as it leaves and we have the fall of rocks and then it's over, at that point, it's going to be August. So it'll be August for the Northern Hemisphere and August for the Southern Hemisphere, and that's where the Earth, so there's going to be in other words, it could happen in April and take a week for pole shift and the fall of rocks, and then all of a sudden it's going to be August. But you're just going to have to deal with it. In other words, there will be a year, there's likely to be a year in which there are no crops. It could happen in December when this happens, and it takes a week to happen, and then all of a sudden it's August. So people aren't going to complain about that too much, because we're just starting our winter in the Northern Hemisphere. You're just starting the summer in the Southern Hemisphere, and all of a sudden, bam, it's August. But I will say that my wife has had several dreams where the water sloshing from pole shift comes in pushing ice. And the only time that that could ever happen would be April. And she's seen the tidal surge, and the water just races up the side of this mountain, and at the front of the wave is all the ice that it formed. Well, of course, there's no ice in August, and in December, the ice is just beginning to form. But if it's a really cold winter, you can get sea ice a couple feet thick. And if there's a tidal surge of salt water coming in, pushing ice, that can only be one time of the year, and that would be when all the ice is formed, and that would have to be April. So, therefore, my guess, using my wife's psychic abilities, is that it would happen in April of some year, and that all of a sudden we would then go to August, which would mean that we would skip that whole summer.
And another song comes to mind is Justin Hayward's Forever Autumn, which was going through my mind this afternoon, even though it's June. So anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so... So that's this magnetosphere is one issue, and look, they don't take me and show me how they're doing this. Nancy's the one receiving that information, but you have to agree. I don't care where you live or what you're doing, but this weather is totally screwed up. So they just announced that this is the wettest Maine, the wettest June ever in Maine, and we've had approximately double the normal rainfall. And like I said, even though I live 2 miles back from the ocean and I look out on all of these islands, I'm surrounded with fog right now. We've already had 4 inches of rain in the last few days. We're supposed to get possibly another 5 inches in the next few days. And I really feel like we're living in a rainforest. It's not what I originally signed up for with Maine weather, but that's, you just have to deal with it. And at least I'm on a mountain where it's not accumulating. But you can see in the news, I mean, look at the flooding they had in Hungary and Germany and the flooding everywhere. I mean, this is the third time this year that the Mississippi River has been 20 feet above flood stage. Well, that's a huge volume of water. I mean, imagine that. So you really do have... This excessive rain, and what that's from is the melting of ice. And the reason why the ice is melting is because the magnetic field of Planet X, as the North Pole points at our equator, is agitating the magma deep in the core and causing it to circulate in an extra manner that's not normal. And this extra manner is bumping up against the plates and creating shudders that are worldwide. There have been seismographs that show a shuddering that happens every seismograph in the world that reads the tectonic plates and the magma below it. They're all showing the same shuddering going on at the same time. So whatever this is, and I'm, of course we know what it is because that's why I'm on the radio talking to you, but whatever this is causing all the magma to become agitated, which is bringing warmer magma up near the surface of the core, which is warming the bottom of the ground. So what you have at the bottom of the oceans is you have the sea bottom is warming up, the water is expanding, you see sea levels going up a little bit, and then you have at the bottom of the glaciers, that's where all the melt is taking place. And the huge differences in the amount of glaciation that's been lost is huge. But at the same time, it's not anything related to what these damn, and I really am very unhappy with these people, the carbon CO2 people that say that the air is getting warmer, because everyone knows the air is getting cooler. I don't think there's any question about that. And England was where they started all the fudging to put it out that global warming is happening, when in fact, if anything, the air is getting cooler.
East Anglia University, the most corruptible scientist you can find in Britain.
Exactly. So, but you have more snow accumulating at the top of the Himalayas and the Arctic, in Antarctica. So people say, oh, there's melting, but they've found records of 200 years ago of people that were able to cross the Arctic in the winter. So, you know, this horrendous, oh my God, Arctic melting is nothing new to it. 200 years ago, and how many people and how much industry was there then? People were able occasionally, not every year, but they were occasionally able to cross the Arctic on a ship. So, you know, it's one of the biggest lies. And of course, now if they announce the truth, there would be so many lawsuits. Do you know how much money has been spent on reducing CO2? And can you imagine if your corporation just spent $500 billion on reducing CO2, and all of a sudden you discovered that there was nothing to it? Wouldn't you want to sue to get that all back, to get the laws changed? So this would be the worst nightmare ever, and you can expect that they're never going to reveal that. And part of that is watching Obama the other day give a speech on global warming and carbon credits and getting rid of coal, and no, we're not going to have any meetings of the Flat Earth Society. He can really be sarcastic, but it isn't taking us any closer to the truth. Now, there are lots of other things. The tail of Planet X stretches from Planet X towards the Earth. Because of static electricity, it's not ranging around everywhere. It's stretched towards the Earth, and it's 10 million miles long, and it's got moons that are close to Planet X. It's got rocks, and then it's got gravel, then it's got oily hydrocarbons, and then it has red oxide, iron oxide dust. So, and you can look this up on ZetaTalk.com, so I'm not going to get into it for too long, because I got plenty of other things to say that are so interesting. But all the oil on Earth is from Planet X going by and brushing the Earth with its tail, and it's settling out of the air into the ground and then seeping down into these huge pools underground. People find that hard to believe. There's always been a huge debate. Is oil continually made by the Earth, or is it all prehistoric? And I'm telling you right now, it came from the tail of Planet X. If a planet's been coming through and doing this with all this oil for millions and millions of years, it doesn't take long. Every 3,600 years it comes back, with the volume of oil that's in the atmosphere, to settle down onto the Earth. And the same with all this red clay soil. So that's another interesting sign of what's going on. Another sign is two-headed animals and albino animals. And haven't you noticed that everywhere you go, there's some really strange anomaly? Children are being born with like six legs, three arms, another twin attached at the neck, Siamese twins, and then white buffaloes, white giraffes, two-headed giraffes, white deer, white moose, white bears, and not polar bears either. So the animals are getting very strange mixed signals about what to do, and it's affecting the DNA, and it's creating a situation where things are not normal, and this is one or two of the other signs of it. Now, you can go out and look at the sun with a filter, and you can see a greasy shine to the air around it. And the same with the moon. If you've ever spilled gasoline on water, like if you're fueling a boat and you get some gasoline in a lake or the ocean, you see this iridescent sheen to it, and you look up at the moon, and you can see this iridescent, it's the oil in the atmosphere. So
it's a greasy rainbow.
Exactly. And so this is, as long as it's here, however many years it takes before it decides to leave, which is why you can't put an exact date on it, because you're just, everything's bobbing and weaving, trying to get by each other, and nothing much is happening. So while it's doing that, it's just showering us with red rain. And especially in India, people have gone out with 5-gallon bucket lids and 5-gallon buckets, and just because they use, you know, like I don't have plumbing, so I use a lot of 5-gallon buckets myself. Only mine are orange, so I don't know if I'd notice any red dust. But in India, they've got lots of them. There are all kinds of pictures showing people going out in the morning and their buckets are completely got a red dust in the bottom of them. And the lids, if they're upside down on the ground, the next morning you go out and all of a sudden the white lid looks red. So this is happening all over the place.
So another, we can thing, harvest iron from the sky with magnets on the rain. That's interesting.
Well, actually, you know, this is one of the most beautiful solutions to all the world's problems is iron oxide. Now, that might sound strange. Iron is the most plentiful metal on Earth because of the core. And you can imagine this huge core of Planet X and volcanic eruptions spewing lava and iron oxide dust and fumes with iron into the atmosphere, trailing behind Planet X, getting into the tail, and then anything the tail brushes gets painted with it. But the interesting thing is the second most plentiful metal on Earth is aluminum, and that's all in all the clay. So if people think we're going to run out of iron or we're going to run out of aluminum, they can forget that idea. But
no, it's copper and silver that I'm worried about.
Yeah, and gold. And I see the price of gold just fell again. It's down to 1,100 an ounce, I think, which it was up to like 1,700 or 1,800 an ounce.
Yeah,
well, and that's to the point where people normal. Won't even mine the gold because it costs $1,000 an ounce to mine gold. So gold mines are going to be shutting down. Gold will be harder to get, so therefore price will go up again. I don't really play the game with the economy because I'm not an investor in commodities, but you can just count on the fact that everything's very unstable right now, and there's a variety of reasons for it. But the interesting thing about the ocean is that plankton is the bottom of the food chain. Everything in the ocean starts with plankton, and guess what plankton's favorite food of all is? If you could give plankton, you say, you know, it's your birthday, what would you like to eat? Plankton would say, please give me iron oxide, iron ore dust.
Space dust.
Because chlorophyll is only possible because of iron. That's the only way you get anything green in the whole world, whether it's dandelion greens, romaine lettuce, broccoli, whatever, it's iron.
Well, we will only function because of iron and hemoglobin.
Well, exactly, and that's what's so interesting about chlorophyll and hemoglobin, because...
And planets have iron in them, and stars have iron in them.
See...
There's something about this iron business...
Well, I'm telling you now, only one atom difference between a molecule of hemoglobin and a molecule of chlorophyll. So in these last days, when you're trying to figure out what you should be eating, the one thing your body has to do almost no work to incorporate is something that's green. Because the chlorophyll has the iron, your body only has to change one atom in the molecule, and bingo, you've got hemoglobin. So... if there's nothing else you should be eating at this time when there will be little food available, it's greens. Now, of course, you're not a cow, so you can't just chew on grass and swallow it because you'll get plugged up and then you'll die. And I remember one of the very first survivor shows in the United States. They had this guy who was an army survival specialist. And during the day, he would go up on this hill, and the other cast members would look at him and they go, he's cheating. He's got a secret food supply, because they'd see him chewing. And he was up there picking grass and chewing it and using his saliva to rinse the fiber of the chlorophyll, which he was swallowing, and then he would spit out the grass. And he'd do that for about an hour, and he was keeping his body supplied with iron. And he was the very first person kicked out because they thought somehow he had gotten to the island and stashed a secret stash of food, and that's how little they understood survival. But
so, you chew it and spit it out. Okay.
If you would, yeah, exactly. Chew it and spit it out. Now, Dana Langridge,
post-survival hints.
Exactly. So, and remember, you're not a cow, so don't try and swallow. But plankton love iron oxide dust. So, and guess what they do when they get the iron oxide dust? They take carbon out of the atmosphere and allow the oxygen to be on its own. So what would get rid of all the CO2 in the world and help the whole food chain in the ocean would be to take freighters full of iron oxide dust and sprinkle it all over the oceans continuously. And that would just subtract so much CO2 from the air, it would be noticeable. At the same time, with more plankton, every single level of the food chain in the ocean would increase to the point where all the fish would come back, everything would have tons of food. So, and has anybody suggested that? Yes. And what happened? They were ridiculed. And it's never been done.
But it's going to happen naturally, and presumably this is part of the Earth's natural replenishment cycle. If this happens every 3,600 years, some part of the Earth's ecosystem is actually reliant on this, isn't it?
Exactly. And when all the commercial fishing fleets, which are just, you know, raping the oceans and taking everything, and when all of those sink and are out of business because they don't have any more fuel and the tidal surges wash them up 100 miles inland and they can't get any more fishing nets and they can't get any more crew and there's no way to get the boat out, the oceans are going to be the first place to come back. So that's where everybody should look for their primary source of food. It's going to be remarkable. And, of course, the oceans are going to have a funny split pea green color because that's what happens when you take iron oxide dust and you sprinkle it in the ocean. So when you see that split pea dust, you can, like, you know, thank the creator or God or Mother Earth or Planet X, wherever your thanks go to, and say, because this is going to bring all the oceans back like nobody alive has ever seen before. So it's something that should be much anticipated and is going to actually be a blessing.
So that's something good to look forward to. However, its means of arrival is going to be in the form of red dust in the sky, red rivers. Is it bad to, well, I suppose, as I said, you know, if it is simply iron oxide in your water, passing a magnet to the side of it will draw all the oxide
iron
to
particle.
It, wouldn't it?
Well, yes, That isn't that bad. I mean, I wouldn't say that anybody should go outside and find a rusty bar and start sucking on it, because you definitely can have too much iron. But it's interesting, you know, they say that that people that have multiple sclerosis have a major iron deficiency. And if they would increase the amount of iron intake in their body, they would get over all the symptoms. So
there's a drink in Scotland. You can only probably get it in Scotland. It's called Iron Brew, and it's bright red, and my son loves it. I mean, basically, it's a fizzy pops, like a cola, but it's made with, it's like I think he put, like, carbonic acid on a girder and got this red drink, added sugar, and sold it as Iron Brew. But it does contain iron, and it's good for hangovers. But it's sold, you know, sold like Pepsi, you know.
Well, your blood is your first line of defense. So when you're giving your body iron that's easily digestible, such as in green plants, then what you're doing is you're actually creating a stronger immune system against everything else that might happen to you. And your body takes very little work to digest that and utilize it. And if you start with you know, green algae. I mean, there's so many, I think people buy spirulina, pay a fortune for it, and there's other algaes that they mix into drinks and things like that. And then, people just sprout wheatgrass and leave the bottle out in the sun so the sprouts turn green as soon as they can. And then they juice that, and that's like the food of the gods. There are people who have recovered from cancer just eating that without anything else. Just wheatgrass juice.
Rejuvelac, they call that, isn't it? Yeah, I've experienced that. A few people around here have, you know, actually taken it upon themselves to grow it for people, grind it up, and, you know, you get this little tiny little shot glass of this thick green stuff that just tastes like grass. It tastes like concentrated grass. It really does.
It's got a funny flavor. It's not a bad flavor, but it's got like a little aftertaste to it. But it's, you've got to remember, as things sprout, they create vitamins and enzymes and for the plant to grow, and you're digesting that, and it's like just pure nutrients without, you know. And there's other things that your body can digest really easily, like honey. I mean, you know, honey is good for wounds. It's good for what ails you. Your body really doesn't have to digest it. Honey is one of the only foods in the world that can pass right through the walls of your stomach into your system without having to be processed in any way, shape, or form. It can just go right through the cell walls of your organs and, like, give you energy. It's a remarkable substance, really.
I've just been corrected by my girlfriend. Iron Brew is orange, not red, but, you know, it's there you go.
Mm-hmm. So, and also, now listen, I get up before sunrise, and I have the computer, and I can look up the naval tables, and I know what season of the year is, and I know when the sun should rise. And in June of 2010, I got up, I made a cup of coffee, and all of a sudden the sun rose. Well, I'm like, holy crap, it was an hour early. Well, how does the sun rise an hour early? Well, I'll tell you how it does it. The earth wobbles. I sent that picture, you posted it on your blog, of, it's a geosynchronous satellite, geostationary satellite image called GEOS. It's stationed over the earth to record the weather. And there, quite plainly, it's a 5 megabyte file, so it's a big file. But if you watch it, you can right-click on it and download it yourself and watch it on your own computer, leave it playing. It's remarkable. The Earth is actually wobbling. And so when it wobbles, things happen that have never happened before, and that is the sun rises further north or south, the sun sets further north or south, the sun is higher or lower in the sky, the moon is higher or lower. Now, I live in Maine, 44 degrees north, and I've gone out and had the moon so directly overhead that the shadow, my shadow, covers only my shoes. Now, that should never happen. It should never happen. And yet, this is the kind of stuff that's happening. So you, if you want to say, well, I want to remain plugged in, you've got to go and follow this natural stuff.
Well, I mean, it's actually something that seems to be spontaneously happening to me. All right, so I'm going out. I'm growing stuff. I'm growing potatoes and really getting down into my soil after years and years of being very technical and very kind of disconnected. I'm anchoring myself down into this. Into the soil, and it just seems completely spontaneous. I've given up eating meat because I can't grow my own meat. You know,
yeah.
It's becoming more and more self-sufficient. I'm learning how to build things. I find myself acquiring things over my lifetime. I've always kind of kept things for a later date, and I'll need it, and then I'll find it and refer to it and use it, you know, like I'll have three coat hooks for 15 years in a box, and one day I arrive and I'm at a house and I need a coat rack, you know, sort of thing.
Right. Well, you know, people thought that I was like a hoarder or something, that I was collecting too much stuff, you know. They go, what is this? Yeah. But I've always, since 1968, I've always thought, well, pole shift is going to happen in my lifetime. I've got to have stuff, because where am I going to get it if I don't have it? And sometimes Janet will be a little mad at me because I'll come home with a dump with more stuff than I left with, you know. It's all different, whatever I can get.
Different stuff. Love it.
But, like, see, there's a lot of really rich people with yachts, and they have a big chain that goes from the yacht, their mooring chain, and it goes down to a big rock on the bottom that anchors the boat. So, but, you know, the average person, like, changes the chain every 5 years, because there'll be an electrogalvanic response with the chain where the shackle is a slightly different metal than the chain, and so the shackle will erode. Uh-huh. And so rather than lose the whole thing, they get a barge with a crane to lift the stone off the bottom, take it to shallow water, and when the tide goes out, then they change the chain. But the rich people change it every year. So it's kind of funny, because I've got probably 300 feet of chain. I mean serious chain that can pull 20,000 pounds. I've got all these pieces of chain that I find at the dump.
Your car springs must love that too.
Yeah, and I bought connectors and hooks and stuff like that so I can link them all together. But I've had a tree that was leaning the wrong way, and I've climbed up it with a ladder, put a chain around the tree, then put it in 100 feet of chain, and then use a come along and pull the tree backwards the other way, and then cut it so it doesn't fall up against the power lines or some, you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then I've got, see, a lot of people, you've got to realize that when these worldwide earthquakes start happening, they're going to be in the 8, 9, and 10 range. And they're actually, the Richter scale was really not designed to measure quakes in those ranges. And so they might say a 9 or a 10, but it might really be a 15 or a 20. But how are you going to know? And it won't matter anyway, because the devastation is almost total. So foundations are going to crack, walls are going to crack. In so many countries, they have these fragile stone buildings with Portland cement, and they're just going to collapse. And you see, when there's a big quake in Turkey or Iran or Afghanistan, that's exactly what happens. Thousands die. And so I built all my buildings on huge wooden beams that I cut at an angle at either end, and I put a big ring in either end of the building. And so they're sitting on the ground, and I can take one of these chains, connect it to my tractor, and pull the building to a different location. So if there's a huge 9 or 10 earthquake and the building falls over, then I can just use the tractor to stand it back up, and I can move it to another location. So I've thought all this stuff through to how am I going to survive having a situation where other people, whatever they've expected is always going to be there, isn't going to be there. I'm still going to be in business.
Are you a fan of Cliff High? Have you ever listened to Cliff High?
Who?
The webbot guy.
Oh, well, I was. Let's just say I was interested, but then he did an interview that I saw on YouTube where he said that it was all a fake. But then you think he'd go away after he said that, but he said he came back and he's still doing it. So. But no, I don't pay any attention to him at all.
Oh, well, just interestingly, he's talking about very similar things about he's 60 and he's decided to move home and bought some land, or is buying some land. He hasn't even bought it, but he's putting his homes on poles living in a yurt form of housing. So,
yurts, you gotta love yurts, really.
Longest running kind of empire ever ran on yurts.
Yeah, and they look like flying saucers, and they're from Mongolia, and they make them with felt over there. Around here, they've got like really expensive yurt makers that make stuff that you can install, you know. Mm-hmm. And I love them, you know. I think I've never really been that enamored of circular buildings. I'm not sure why. I really like rectangular buildings. But, you know, hey, anything is good. A teepee is excellent because you've got 23 poles. You put up the first three, and then on either side you add 10 more poles. So you have 23 poles, and they're just resting on the ground. So nothing can take that down. Nothing. The wind can't take it. Earthquakes can't take it. I mean, it's an ideal way to live. And you've got a central fire, and you're warm, and you know, there's a lot of people who have never experienced being in a teepee, but I've not only experienced being in the Canadian Rockies in real American Indian teepees, but I've also built some teepees. And it was funny because in 1976, my brother and I and two friends were going to build a teepee in the Maine woods. And my friend said, Sioux teepees are 19 feet 6 inches. And we're like, Dan, we're not building a Sioux teepee. They had to haul them with their horses. They moved. We're leaving this in the Maine woods. We're never going to take it down. We're going to cut the biggest poles that four people can cut, strip, smooth, and stand up, which is 35 feet. And he actually had a fist fight with the other friend over this. And so we didn't talk for a whole day, and then the next day he started digging a big circle, for putting a pipe in underground for the central fire. So we knew that by watching him that he had agreed to do a 35-foot teepee. But that would hold. We took chainsaws and we cut huge white pines and we made slab tables that were 36 inches wide and 8 feet long. We took cut white cedar and made double beds and went to tag sales and got used carpets and set up our sleeping bags and our pads on these double beds that we drilled them and pegged them. And easily a 40-foot teepee with 35-foot poles, 40 feet in diameter, will easily hold, if you had nothing else in there, it would hold 60 people. And if you had a little, like just benches, you would hold 40 people. And if you had some furniture in there, you could easily sleep, you know, 10 people could live in there every day together and get along. Well, if they do get along, maybe they won't, but.
So, what about, do you use a ship sail or something to wrap the thing?
Well, in my experience, because this is a very damp climate, so if you use cotton, you are going to, you know, have mildew and rot, and then you're leaking. Then pretty soon you have no covering. Now, what we did when we built that 35 footer, which was really interesting, but it needs to be replaced every year. But it was a lot of fun because we covered it with clear plastic. Well, you can't nail clear plastic, and you've got to fasten it. And so what we did was we took pebbles and stuck them in the edges of the clear plastic, and then tied string around it to make these buttons. And then we attached other strings to the buttons and went around the teepee to hold the plastic in place. So no matter how strong the wind was, it never blew away. And we did like three or four layers of clear plastic. Well, it was kind of neat because you could be in the teepee and you could just dimly see through the plastic the full moon. So it was really kind of neat. And it was completely waterproof. So, but... yes.
Oh, so a modern solution, yeah. My friend he got the plastic off the side of a truck, you know, the tarpaulin thing, and made a teepee from that. Up in Dallas. And Dallas here is about 3 miles away from where I live now. And it's the original place from the place where the people from Texas started out.
Oh.
So Dallas. Well, Dallas is very hairy. So anyway, he's got a teepee in Dallas.
Well, I'll tell you something that really is excellent, and it's just what you said. Dacron sails are unbelievable, and they'll last forever in the weather. So that would be my number one choice if you could do it.
Dacron. So I need to go and nuzzle up to an old yacht or something.
Yes, but... see, they're very expensive. I mean, I made an ice boat, and I do 60 miles an hour on the glare ice, and I made it with a regular tarp, a 10 by 20 foot tarp. I cut it diagonally, re-grommeted it, used a spruce tree for the mast and another spruce tree for the boom, and I do 60 miles an hour on three steel blades. on the ice, and it's like a fabulous thing. But there, and my ice boat cost me a week's worth of work, 7 days, nonstop, and $200. But there's other ice boats out there that have beautiful Dacron sails from sailmakers, and their ice boats cost them $5,000.
Right. Now, here we are. We're at the top of the hour. We're going to take a break, and we are going to play some music from some people I know, and it's called The Sky Shall Vanish. And it's one of our sort of British... you'd call him a dark comedy poet, John Cooper Clarke. So this is John Cooper Clarke with The Sons of Arca and The Sky Shall Vanish.
Taken without the walls of the city, where pestilence shall hold dominion over all. The water will stink and prove bitter on his tongue. A plague of isolation shall deliver him to decrepitude. Whither shall he fly in such misery? He wants to run. Where can he run? It's blood uptown and blood downtown, blood in the woods and blood in the country. He will crawl like a raving dog, starving with the hunger. But the will therein lieth, which does not die. Who knows the mysteries of the will with its vigor? For God is but a great will, pervading all things by nature of its intent. Man doth not yield himself to the angels, nor unto death utterly, save only through the weakness of his feeble will. Himself to the angels, nor unto death utterly, save only through the weakness of his feeble will. The sky shall vanish. Shall enter the empire of the Lord, through the silent labyrinth of death to the echoing chambers of paradise, in whose serene opalescence live the innocent, and goodness lives forever like the odor of a million flowers in the sense of every spirit who lives therein. Where numberless ranks of angels, draped in feeble robes that hang like golden ethers about each celestial frame, angels who sing as with one voice the fabulous music of the spheres. Of eternity she reigns, immaculate, infinite. flames of pale blue mystery. Her frail features radiant with some extra lunar incandescence. The mystic rose, in whose blemishing grace he shall come to know the appalling strangeness of the mercy of God.
Beyond with JP.
This is indeed Ever Beyond with JP, 30th of June 2013. I'm here speaking with Gordon James Giannotto, and we're discussing the sky falling. Hi, Gordon, did you enjoy that?
Yeah, that was quite nice. I had arranged my house when I first bought this mountaintop. I thought, well, this is a great tower site, and if I can get a tower up here to give me some additional income, I'm going to. So, and a lot of people think, oh, you don't want to be anywhere near that electromagnetic radiation, but I actually have my beehives under the tower, so you can't possibly look at the beehives without seeing the tower in the background. So far, they seem very happy. In fact, two hives formed 5 times last summer, so happy is an under describing it. But anyway, so I had selected the site for where I'd want the tower, so I didn't have to deal with it. So it's in my north field. It's about 500 feet away, and I aligned my house so that it was directly east-west, so that when you came out the door on the north side, you're facing the North Star, and when they put the tower up, the tower pointed at Polaris.
All right.
So it's like the greatest thing. Whenever I want to see where the North Star is, I know only need to stand at my glass door or step out onto the granite door
Man,
stone that cut myself.
I tell you, you're so like me. I didn't do exactly the same thing, but I did have to do exactly the same thing. I did it in a different way. When I used to live in the last place, and I lived there for 3.5 years, and I've been waiting for the poles to start moving around. I made sure that if I stood in a particular place, looking up through a particular thing, I would see Polaris. So I know exactly if the poles had moved or not. So
exactly.
So I see what you're talking about.
Exactly. I was thinking about drilling a hole in the granite and then welding a vertical pipe and then making the right angle so that when you look through the hole, you saw Polaris, and if you ever got up there and you looked at it, because it makes a 3-degree circle, so it doesn't stay in the same point as seen from Earth, but it's a 3-degree circle. It's pretty close. And but then I had this, when they put the tower up, I was like, oh my God, Polaris is sitting directly above the tower. Well, about 3 months ago, I went out at night, and I look up, and Polaris is like, I don't know, 35 degrees to the west. I'm like, huh, I couldn't believe it. And the Milky Way was laying on its side and it was pointing up at it and it was nowhere near where it should have been. And it didn't move, but the Earth moves. So these are the things that if you really want to plug yourself in, I love there was a Jack Nicholson movie where, I don't know, he was training dogs or had a scam going and he had an Oriental wife and then he was having affairs with the people who he was giving these guard dogs to, or it was a business he was selling them. And so they decided to go to marriage counseling. And, so he's with his Oriental wife and they're at the marriage counselors and she turned to him and goes, "You're not plugged in." So if you want to plug yourself in, please start noticing this stuff. Go to the naval observation tables for your location and take note of when sunrise should be. Take note of when sunset should be. Start looking at landmarks. Even if you can't right where your house is, travel to some nice little lookout point and just watch the march of the setting sun. In the summer, it's as far north as it can go, and then it heads back south. And then on the winter solstice, it's as far south as it goes, and then it starts going back again. So all of this is extremely interesting, but if you don't notice it, now, dozens and dozens of people have said, "I've never had the sunrise through my southeast window before and put sunlight through the kitchen into the living room." You know, I just made that up, but things like that the sun is not where it should be. And if you're not paying attention, this stuff is going on and you're not noticing it. Well, as the Earth slows in its rotation and then stops, I mean, that's like the last minute. Now you've got a couple of days until pole shift. What are you going to do? So, you know, maybe before then, the rocks from the tail of Planet X are going to take out all the satellites. Then the internet's going to go down. The power grid's going to go out because the earthquakes are going to disconnect all the generators, the nuclear power plants and the coal plants, and everything's going to start just disrupting. So then what are you going to do to rely on for news? You've got to use your eyes, ears, you know, you've got to be aware of this. And my wife she started feeling this burning in her feet. And she's like, I said, "Well, you know, it could be, what do they call that, fasciitis or whatever? Plantar fasciitis." And so she went to a podiatrist and he's going, "Well, you're going to need special shoes." And then she went to somebody else and they said, "Well, it's this or that." And she went to like altogether probably about four or five doctors, which I can't do, but she's got complete medical care. So, but she went to all these doctors and they're all telling her different things. And we couldn't figure it out. And then it was her birthday in, I believe it was 2011, in July 6th. And she did a radio interview, and she drank a lot of coffee because normally she goes to bed at like 8 or 9 o'clock, and she had to start the interview at 10 and end at 12. So she drank a lot of coffee, and after the interview, she's walking around the house turning stuff off, and she goes, "There's electricity in the ground. I've got to turn everything off." I said, "There is no electricity in the ground because I poured the slab myself, and there's not a single electric wire slab, nor does any electric connection of any kind involve the slab at all." And it was really ridiculous. And I'm following her around because she was all hyped up on the coffee. And she's walking from room to room turning stuff off. And I'm right behind her turning it back on. I said, "Would you please stop that? Stop it." So the burning got really bad, worse than ever. And so because she was so jacked up, there's no way she could go to sleep. So, and I'm a night owl anyway. So we're sitting there. And pretty soon at 5 a.m., it was bright from the sun coming up, probably around 4. So anyway, we're sitting there, and she made a cup of coffee, and she said, "Well, I'm going to go to the outhouse, and I'll be back." So she came back from the outhouse at 5 in the morning, and she goes, "Something is really wrong." Because she feeds the birds, and she's got flocks and flocks of birds. And if she doesn't go out to feed them at sunrise, they will actually fly over and brush up against the windows And we know the birds are like, hey, why aren't you out here giving us some cracked corn? Why aren't you giving us some black sunflower seeds? What's wrong with you? Why? And then they'll all gather on the trees and they'll make such a racket that even if you wanted to sleep, you couldn't sleep. And we've got ravens and crows and blue jays, and it's just insane the amount of noise that you get in the morning until she goes out with all this bird seed.
That's what you do when you feed them. That's what you get when you feed them.
Yeah, well, it's lovely, you know. So she came back in the house and she goes, something is really wrong. She goes, it's total silence. She goes, come outside. And I go outside and you could hear a pin drop at 300 feet. There was no movement of any kind of anything. And all you could hear something. And what it was animals in the background whimpering. And I go, wow, something really is wrong. So we came inside, made some coffee, and we're sitting here in the living room where I'm talking to you right now. And all of a sudden, from 7 miles away, there's another mountain. It sounded like somebody had drilled a hole in the granite every 3 feet the whole distance and was setting it off at the speed of sound. It sounded like an F-16 fighter at full thrust took off at that mountain, headed right towards our house. And it was just like laying on the tracks and having a high-speed train pass right over you, except it was under us, and it was an earthquake. And it came right under the house, and just south of us, 2 miles where the ocean is, there's an east-west crack, which is where the water is, and that's where the fault line stopped. So this earthquake went right under our house, and as soon as it happened, we were like shocked. And it was probably a 2.5, so it didn't really knock anything over, but everything shook. And it was so loud, it was, as I said, it was like you were riding on an F-16 fighter jet. And the noise was incredible, and the speed it approached was easily 600 miles an hour at the speed of sound. And it passed right under the house and ended 2 miles south of us. So it was a fracture, an earthquake that was 9 miles long, and then it ended. And at that exact moment, all the burning in her feet stopped.
Ah. Now, another parallel.
We know that the girl is earthquake sensitive.
That's right. I experienced the same thing. I was in Cyprus a few years ago to visit my son who was living there, and I really felt uncomfortable, and I felt I felt antsy, just like you're saying, you know, like literally, like my feet were antsy. I couldn't put my feet on the ground. And 2 weeks later, they had an earthquake.
Well, see, there's the piezoelectric effect of the quartz crystals being squeezed by the pressure building up until it fractures.
That's right.
And it actually does give off electricity. She could feel the electricity, but all the animals, I mean, one of the most famous predictors of earthquakes is missing animal reports in cities. And I think there's this guy, I forget what his name is and what he calls his method, but he looks in the newspapers to see how many missing animals there are. Our cat disappeared, have you seen it? It's orange, or our dog, or our horse, or something else, because the animals can all feel this, but they just don't know what to do about it. So they react in this strange way. So what I'm saying is you've got to plug yourself in to the natural world. I know it's hard in a city, and you think, well, you know, I'm lucky if I even have a window that faces the side of another building and I get some air, but you've really got to start becoming aware of these things. And for instance, they had a strange thing happen in Korea, Maine, in the harbor. Well, they have these lobster cars, is what they call them, but they're 20-foot by 20-foot platforms that float on the surface, and they're hatches. And you open up the hatches, and below the surface are these big rectangular spaces where they put lobsters, because lobsters are very valuable. So when the lobstermen come in, they put them down in these they open up the hatches, put the lobsters in there to keep them alive, and then they padlock the hatches. So these things weigh like, you know, tens of thousands of pounds, and it's wet wood, and they've got this blue foam under the top surface to keep them from sinking. And they're not only that, but they're anchored at all four corners with huge chains going to giant rocks on the bottom. So these things are not going anywhere. Well, they had a wave come in. Nobody could ever explain it, and to this day they haven't explained it. A wave came in and turned over about a dozen lobster cars. Well, that's just about as impossible as anything could be. And, you know, so they're these strange events, so you've got to take note of them when they happen, because this is an indication that something really big is on the way, and it's got all these different little effects. You can't really predict what's going to happen. They're saying, well, a fishing boat dragged through an internet cable and parted the internet cable. Well, no. Look at where it happened. Africa, the bottom of Africa is staying where it is, and the top of it's tilting towards the east. And all these lines kept getting cut in the Mediterranean. Well, the Mediterranean is going to become narrower. They just discovered fault lines off of the Gibraltar in the Atlantic. And they're realizing that there's going to be a folding going on, and it's possible that you could be there when Morocco or Algeria, whatever it is, cruises right into Gibraltar, and all of a sudden the Mediterranean is cut off. So there are all these things going on, but people don't understand that as the Earth spins, all the water accumulates around the equator. You don't notice that because let's say that you're on the equator in your boat, and you decide to go to the North Pole, and you're going to follow the coast the whole way. Doesn't matter what coast, you're going to follow the coast. So as you go, all the water seems to be at the right level. It seems normal. But what you don't realize is that the water accumulates around the equator. So even though you think everything's level, and whatever level it is in the Atlantic is going to be the same as the Pacific, no, not at all. So if the Earth starts slowing down, the crust starts slowing down or stops, guess what happens to all the water? It goes towards the poles to distribute itself of equal depth all over the Earth. Well, right there, you're going to have huge flooding just when the crust stops turning. When Planet X grabs it harshly enough or strongly enough, it grabs the Iron Bar and the Great Atlantic Rift, because Planet X will be towards the sun. So as the Earth rotates and the Atlantic faces the sun, rises in the east, comes across, faces the sun, then all of a sudden the crust is going to be grabbed and it's not going to move. So at that point, the sun's not going to set, it's not going to rise, it's going to stay where it is. So if you're on the Atlantic Ocean, you're going to have 3 days of sunlight, but if you're in the Pacific, you're going to have 3 days of darkness. But that's not pole shift yet. But guess what's going to happen? All that water that was at the equators is going to rush back to the poles. Well, how many feet is that? I don't really know. I don't know if it's 20 feet, 30 feet, 40 feet.
I heard that the equatorial bulge is about 12 miles. Is that the same thing?
Well, yeah, yes, it is. Well, partly the Earth is flattened at the poles, so... Because the magma inside the core is accumulates at the equator as well. But I'm just talking about the surface. So now you've got the crust has stopped, pole shift still hasn't happened yet, and now Planet X grabs the crust and slides it over the north pole of the core and drops it again so that Recife, Brazil is the new north pole. Now, at that moment, all the water went from the old equator to the old poles. But now the Earth is going to start spinning again. The crust is going to attach itself to the core because Planet X is left, and that's pole shift. And the crust is going to start turning with the core, and the water is going to rush from the old poles to the new equator. That's what creates the 600-foot tidal surges worldwide. Now, there's only two places in the world that are going to rise at pole shift, and one of them is Maine, and the other is New Zealand. The reason for this is that even 10,000 years ago, New Zealand and Maine had 2 miles of ice sitting on the surface. And even though granite floats on iron magma, and that's how the continents stay above the water and are elevated, the 2 miles of ice weighed so much that it pushed the crust down at those two places. And once the crust comes free of the core, Maine is going to rise 500 feet, and New Zealand is going to rise 500 feet. So, those are two places that are safety zones because they're all of a sudden, bingo, going to be 500 feet higher than they were the day before. But you still have 600-foot tidal waves, not waves because they're not going to be breaking. It's just going to be like, it's really surge is the best word for it. And this is all described in ZetaTalk.com. You can go look it up, and it's got all the safe areas, the city by city, country by country. And what's going to happen is that this is going to just come in and just keep on coming. It's not going to be a wave. It's just going to be a tide that never stops coming until it's come in 600 feet. Well, if you're in a fjord or some natural place that has a line of ridges that funnels the water, what you're going to have, like in Texas, where you've got two lines of ridges with a gap between them, the water's going to come in and be funneled almost 900 feet deep. Because the water's going to keep on coming, but if it reaches a little cul-de-sac, where can it go? It can only keep on going up. So, and at the same time, the whole UK is prophesied to sink 150 feet, Florida 150 feet. So then, all this stuff washes inland, trails all this debris back into the ocean, sloshes a few more times, and then settles down. But at that point, guess what the next step is? All the ice in the world is at the wrong places. So, all the ice in the world is going to melt. Now, scientists have said, well, if all the ice in the world melted, the oceans would come up 200 feet. But they're wrong. What's going to happen is there's a new continent arising between Africa and South America. And this is a new continent. So there's going to end up being 8 continents, not 7. And this new continent is the reason why the British government has got a renewed interest in the Falklands. When that pops up at pole shift, the British Navy is planning to be the first ones there and claim it for England. And I know that will warm your heart because you're in Scotland.
Well, I'm not that patriotic. I have to say I feel more like a global citizen than a member of a soul group incarnating on the earth rather than, you know, a Brit. But it's often... we've always felt that the Brits are a bit like your cousin who's a bit of a loser, but you know, you bring him along anyway, you know.
Well, I actually favor the Scots over the Brits anyway.
Yeah, well, you know, exactly. There's the English and then there's the Scots, who are very, very different people. Very, very different people indeed.
Exactly.
And the Scots are just the loveliest. Loveliest. They're warm. They have feelings, they understand. It's like, oh, wow, you know, and the whole level of conversation is different because you can hear from from the sense of humor where they're coming from, and it just blows me away.
To me, of course, I'm half Sicilian and half Scottish, but to me, the British people seem so cold and unempathetic. And
no, those are the English.
The English. The English. There have been so many times, like when, you know, because it's normal to like kiss everybody in my family hello and goodbye, hug them, you know, put my arm around them. I mean, that's just the way it is, you know.
And the English only kiss on mating.
They back off.
Well, these Americans, they're all over. They're touching my face with their lips. It's awful. Bloody awful. Hate that stuff.
Yeah, I'm not kissing them on the lips. I'm not. There's no romance in it.
There's no tongue involved.
Right, so they can calm down, but they don't act like they can calm down.
Hey, we got a question, and this is from Z. Who apparently is 7, who apparently is Michael. He says, "What about if you're in the center of the US? Will it be like sunset?"
Well, it'll be like a dawn that was starting to come but didn't come for 3 days. Because this, you know, you picture how the Earth turns. So the sun is in the same position. The Earth is turning towards the east. That's why the best time to see meteors is after midnight, because then you're on the side of the Earth that's facing the direction the Earth should be traveling in. Of course, that hasn't worked for the last few years. But anyway, so in the Pacific, it'll be just dark for 3 days. In the mid-Atlantic, it'll be bright sun for 3 days. In Scotland, it'll be like late afternoon, early evening for 3 days. And in Maine, where I am, it'll be like mid-morning, early morning to mid-morning. And then in the middle of the United States, it'll be like early dawn.
This is going to be the long dark night of the soul, or the long bright, the long calm sweet afternoon of the Scottish Isles, of the soul.
Right, because really the highest place to survive in all the British Isles is how do they pronounce it? Brecon.
Brecon.
In Wales.
All right, Brecon Beacons.
There's a national park there. Some military bases, and that's why they're there, by the way.
Yeah.
And let me continue with this interest in different places. The United States just signed a long-term treaty with Australia to move a whole military base over there. And what is the purpose of that? They are planning, the minute the poles shift and the Antarctic site starts melting, they're planning to swarm all over it and take all of it.
But hang on a second. Aren't the Nazis already there?
That's a whole other
story. That's a whole other story. Anyway, yeah. Moving swiftly on. Look, where are we? 16:30? We've got half an hour to go. So this is part five of more. You were right. You know, when you first started this, you said, this is going to take quite a while.
Well, I really did think so. And I see that you are sort of agreeing with me now, because we're in the ninth hour. We're beginning in the ninth hour at this point, or we're halfway through it.
We're halfway through it. We have another question from Joy.
Sure.
People are very, very much enjoying this, the information is fabulous.
Thank you.
According to question from Joy. Are the Anunnaki the same beings as the biblical Elohim?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, they came from heaven to Earth, and they pretended to be God, and they knew that Planet X would be coming every 3,600 years, and so they set up these mining centers, and they didn't have enough people to like be overlords full time, so like that's why the Aztecs and these other groups were so cruel, and their whole purpose. I mean, what were they doing with gold? What can you do with gold? You know, when the Spanish came over, they found entire gardens the size of acres, and every single plant, animal, and structure, rocks, everything were all made out of gold. And you could walk into these gold gardens with tons and tons of gold, meticulously made into leaves and fruits and trees and rocks and streams, everything, but all in gold. And why would you do that? Why would you devote all the energy of a civilization to collecting gold and making this stuff? Because when they came back in 3,657 years, they wanted to take all the gold. And if they didn't get the gold, they would punish the hell out of everybody. So the Aztecs thought nothing of winning a battle and taking all the prisoners and executing them, cutting their heads off or ripping their hearts out. This was all just normal behavior, because these people, the Anunnaki, were very cruel. And then, just after around the time that Jesus was born, I'm not sure exactly before or after, at some point the Council of Worlds go, wow, these people are way too selfish. They've messed with everything for too long. We're kicking them off. So, they're problem was, where did they go? Well, Mars used to be great, but they went to Mars and ruined it mining gold. They drained all the water below the crust, so now the atmosphere changed and it became a cold, dry planet, whereas it had been a lovely, warm, oceanic planet before. And so where else could they go? Planet X wasn't back. they couldn't hold all the Anunnaki on their little space station where they transferred the gold from Earth to there and then from there to Planet X when Planet X came back. So what did they have to do? Well, they took their rocket ships, they loaded them with goats and sheep and wood and hay and grain, and they flew back to Mars. And they landed on Mars and they figured, well, God help us survive until the year 2012 when Planet X is going to come back. And of course, they didn't make it. But if you've got to, you know, it isn't just looking at our world, but you've got to follow the pictures that are coming back from the Curiosity rover. And if you go to YouTube and you do a search for Mars anomalies, you will not believe it. And in Zeta Talk and in the poleshift.ning.com, there are photographs from the Curiosity rover. Well, they're doing high resolution pictures. They're doing like 150 megabyte pictures. So you can just keep, you know, and a lot of people can't download it, but if you can, you can just get the latest pictures and zoom in little area by little area. And guess what? Curiosity rover, which I love it. Ostensibly NASA is searching for life. Well, guess what they found in some of the pictures? Snakes, rats, mice, just, you know, there's something that looks like it could be a bird, on the floor. And where did they send the Curiosity rover? Well, guess what? If you're on Mars and the air is very thin, the place to go would be the deepest place on Mars. Well, that place is called the Gale Crater, and it's 12,000 feet below sea level. So guess where they decided to send, the Curiosity rover? To the deepest place on Mars. And guess where the Anunnaki would have gone to survive, to wait for Planet X to return, is the Gale Crater, the deepest place on Mars. And on the desert there, you see pictures of jewelry boxes, dolls, little gizmos. It's like they gradually died out, and maybe there was an Anunnaki child playing with an Anunnaki doll, and then she died, and there wasn't any more food. And what kind of a planet is it that you could bring grain for the sheep and the goats, and now you find skulls of goats and sheep strewn about on the desert? You see pictures of lines of holes drilled, and next to the line of holes you see a drill, and next to that you see dead human beings. So they went there and they died out. And these pictures from the Curiosity rover, I mean, if you've got any curiosity, a curious bone in your body, look into some of this stuff. And I'm going to send you, JP, to also post, because this backs up the whole story, is the fact that the Anunnaki were kicked off Earth by the Council of Worlds. And they didn't come down and give them an eviction notice. They just, every single thing they did, something went wrong. And it just kept going wrong until they finally got the message. So they did it in a sneaky way. Everything the Anunnaki tried to do failed. So they left. But there still are some descendants of the Anunnaki living in the southern tip of South America. In Patagonia, giants have been sighted and photographed that are 8 to 12 feet tall. So somebody that wants to do a little independent research, and of course there are stories of burial grounds around the world where giants were found. And for the most case, archaeologists have destroyed all the evidence. But, you know, just look in the Bible about story of David and Goliath. It's like the last Anunnaki, and David killed him with a rock, with a slingshot, you know, there's a lot of evidence to back this up. This is not just like some story that's made up. And then you look through the old books, like there's the Kolban Bible, and the first part of it is from Egypt 2,000 years ago, and the second part is called the Book of Britain, and it's not freely available. You can look up parts of the Kolban Bible on the internet, but the Book of Britain, you have to actually purchase the book for $50. But there's all kinds of scriptures. Go reread the book of Revelation and see about mountains falling into the sea and a third of the earth burning up. So You know, everywhere you look, there are these, all these little pieces, and they all came together, or are coming together, to paint the final picture, saying, yes, this is what's been going on, and this is what you can expect is happening. So, it's a dramatic, thing. And, you know, so when we finish, and the pole shift is over, all the ice is melted, it's gonna take 2 years to melt, and the oceans are going to come up 6 inches every tide, 1 foot a day, until the new sea level is 750 feet above present. But because England has sank 150 feet, the new sea level is going to be 850 feet above present. So all of northern Europe, except for the mountains, is going to be underwater. Netherlands gone, all the Baltic nations, Poland, Denmark, the most of Scandinavia along the shore, all gone. And so why did we all of a sudden attack Gaddafi in Libya? You know, people are like scratching their head. What is wrong with Gaddafi? Well, okay, he's supposedly this cruel, sick dictator. The thing was, he did everything any Western nation asked him to do. He made leases with every Western oil company. He cooperated with everything there was. The Libyan people are the best educated people in Africa. They all go to college. They all speak several languages. They all own their own homes. All the women were allowed to watch TV and drive, didn't have to wear burqas. It's the freest, most educated, healthiest, free healthcare nation on earth. And all of a sudden, the European nations together invade it. Well, why? Well, I'll tell you why. They know, the royalty and the elite and the billionaires in Northern Europe know that they cannot possibly survive in Northern Europe after all the ice melts. Not only pole shift, but the ice melting. So, they would love to go to Africa. They don't want to go to Southern Africa because that's where all the diseases are and people have been killing each other for quite a while. But they don't want to go to Eastern Africa because that's very flat. And when Africa crashes into Iraq and Iran, there's no way that, and then sinks and is covered with water, there's no way you can live there. So then they would like to go to, let's say, Morocco and Algeria, but there's mountain tribes there where you cannot possibly defeat them. You could spend 1,000 years trying to defeat those tribes, and you're never going to be able to. So what made Libya so attractive? Well, first of all, it has one of the biggest aquifers in Africa. Second of all, if you go inland from the Mediterranean shore, you get to a huge oil field with the sweetest oil on earth. So what was the real purpose of killing Gaddafi and invading Libya? The real purpose was to make it such a mess that just before pole shift, all the Northern European NATO armies can suddenly come ashore at Tripoli and go inland without any resistance and set up mountain redoubts where the elite and the rich can survive.
Whoa, they're flying south. So they're going to hide. Their plan is to hide out in North Africa.
In the mountains in South Libya, yes.
And, right,
and they're going to have unlimited fresh water, and they're going to have unlimited sweet oil.
How lovely for them.
Yes. And then now let's turn our attention to Russia. All of Russia is flat as a pancake, except the Ural Mountains. And guess what? All of Russia is going to be underwater except the Ural Mountains. And that's why the entire military-industrial complex of Russia is right now focused on the Ural Mountains. They are flattening mountaintops, building tunnels, putting in roads, doing everything they can to sock away supplies, and all the elite and the wealthy of Russia plan to move to the Ural Mountains.
Well, so we're screwed, right?
Well, it's interesting to see how empathetic all the nations of the world are. Not one single nation on earth has agreed to take the emigres from any other nation, and all of this has been discussed only in face-to-face meetings with leaders of countries. It's not been put in any official papers. It's not been recorded. It's not been emailed. It's not been spoken of on Skype or in telephone calls or cell phone calls. It's not been mentioned in satellite messages. It's all face-to-face meetings. And every single leader on earth knows that his days are numbered. And the question he has to ask himself or herself is, where do we go with our wealth and our power to survive? And they're realizing the door is already shut. And they weren't inside the barn before the winter comes.
The wind blows across a misty moor. So
these are all these dramas that are going on. This is why China is making a big deal about they'd love to take over Japan and they'd love to get Taiwan back, and all that's going to be underwater. Japan is going to be shattered. There's a line of volcanoes that's right underneath Japan. It's going to be like, imagine that you put a bunch of pebbles out. You go in your garage with a nice concrete floor. You put a bunch of pebbles on the floor, and then you take your grandmother's best china and you put it on top of the pebbles, and then you start hitting it with a hammer. That's what Japan is going to look like. It's going to be like shattered, and little pieces are going to tilt up. So one end of the little fragment is going to be up, and the other end is going to be down below the level of the gravel, which represents the ocean level. So they're not planning to take that. And the whole Southeast Asia is the Southeastern Asian continent. That is like putting a ribbon on the desk in front of you and holding one end with your finger, and the other end put your finger on it and slide it towards your other finger, and the ribbon goes up and down and up and down as your two fingers approach each other. That's what's happening in Southeast Asia. So Thailand, Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, Indonesia, Malaysia, all going under. And parts of Indonesia just in the last 2 years have sunk 80 feet. And they were trying to say, well, this is freshwater flooding. No, the hell it's not. What it is salt water. You can say, well, it rained a lot and that's why it's flooded. No, you can't when the water's salt. And that's the one thing that they haven't been able to explain. So the best explanation is, you're going to love it. Global warming. Mm.
Of course. Of course, because they can get the tax off it. And they can tax you until the end of the world. How about that?
Yeah.
They'll tax you until the end of the world.
And you see Australia, the left side of it, the west side of Australia, is about to go down. And the east side is already coming up. So, what you have is when it rains in eastern Australia, the water washes down the hill into the river and the river goes out to sea. But now the eastern edge of Australia has been rising. So the water wants to go down the hill into the river and out to sea, except the edge of the continent is more elevated than it used to be. So the water has to pool before it can get high enough to drain over the edge. So these are all these inexplicable, which, you know, don't you love that word, inexplicable? Inexplicable floods in eastern Australia. Well, guess what? The Queen of England's big ranch that she was planning to escape pole shift is in western Australia. So are you going to take the Queen in on your life raft when you try and paddle towards the Swedish Empire and they shoot at you to keep you from landing?
Maybe not.
Now, Prince Harry, he's an interesting dude. He has already announced that the reason why he bought a whole Romanian village up in the mountains is to prepare for pole shift. God love that man.
Very good. So he's telling. Well, I mean, which one, Harry? He's the ginger boy, isn't he?
Well, yeah, he's William's younger brother and
half brother, really.
Charles becomes king and then William becomes king, I mean, Harry's like just a rich playboy, really. I mean, what else can he do with himself?
He's not really bloodline. He's somebody else's. Bless his heart.
Well, anyway. I don't see the Queen of England planning to move to Romania, but Harry is. Look it up. Yeah. I'm not making this stuff up. Now, listen. You're going to love this. All of a sudden, all these penguins are diving into the Atlantic Ocean in Antarctica, and guess where they're swimming to?
Scotland.
Eastern tip of Brazil.
All right. Eastern tip of Brazil.
Okay. So they don't eat anything. They just swim like little bastards. They get to the eastern tip of Brazil. Now they're half starved.
Mm.
And the scientists go, oh my God, these poor penguins got confused and now we have to rescue them. So they take them out of the water, those who survived this long journey north, and they bring them to the rehab center in Guatemala. And they fatten them back up and feed them, and they look like they're going to survive. So they fly them all back to Antarctica, and they let them go. And as soon as they let them go, they swim, they jump right back into the water and swim back to Recife, Brazil.
Oh my God! Oh my God! The poor little fellas.
The poor little fellas. And see, they know that the new North Pole is going to be in Brazil. So they're moving. Why don't we listen to the animals?
Oh.
Now, you're staying in the Canary Islands, and you've got your nice palm tree, and you're sitting there, and guess who lands on the beach? Arctic hooded seals. Okay, so the scientists are going, oh my God, the animals got confused. Look at how tragically starved they are from swimming from Greenland.
Must be global warming.
To the Canary Islands. Yeah, global warming. So they rescue them all and fly them up to their rehab center in Cardiff, Wales. And they keep them imprisoned and they fatten them up until they look like they're going to survive. And they put them on a plane and they fly them back to Greenland.
Oh,
they land in Greenland.
We know how this is going to end. Okay.
They immediately dive back into the ocean and swim to the Canary Islands. Now, if you measure the distance between the North Pole and Greenland, and then you take that same mark on a stick that you have, and you measure the distance from Recife, Brazil, the new North Pole, to the Canary Islands, you'll notice it's the same distance. These animals are not stupid. They know that if they move to the Canary Islands, at pole shift, they're going to have it just the way they're used to having it. They're going to be on the edge of the ice shelf.
And you're saying that Scotland becomes...
nice underwater Atlantis. You just go swim around and look for what the remnants are.
Yeah, there might be some islands left.
Well, you have to look at the elevation. They got to be higher than 850 feet. And then what are you going to do when you get there? I don't know. Do you have maple trees in Scotland?
maple trees.
Do you make maple syrup?
I don't know. I think, well, we've got lots of pines.
Okay, well, that's good. Because remember when in the Age of Discovery, all these sailors were all dying of scurvy?
Pine resin would have helped.
Do you know that you can get off your boat in any part of the world that has evergreen trees, go ashore, take some evergreen needles, chew them up, swallow the juice, spit the needles out because they're only going to kill you, and you've got tons of vitamin C in your body.
Wow. No, I didn't know that. Next time I go out to my garden. Is the same work for Leylandii? Don't eat Leylandii.
So,
but you can make tea from the needles, can't you?
Yes, you could. Yes, that's, and that would be vitamin C.
That's a good way of doing it, making tea from.
Yeah. So I'm telling you right now, the best thing you can do is go buy books on edible plants, edible trees, edible wildlife, books on survival, books on tying off a fishing net. Everyone used to know how to do that 10,000 years ago. Does anybody that's listening to me right now know how to tie a fishing net?
From scratch? How'd you make the string?
First of all, you need some good twine, and it better not be cotton twine because it'll last only about 2 minutes.
Got to use hemp.
No, go to a fishing supply store and buy yourself a 10,000-foot ball of nylon twine, braided nylon twine right now. You can raise the net up and have birds fly into it like they do in Italy. You catch birds. You can go out into the woods and watch, see what little gaps in the clearing that all the birds fly through. You can hand tie a net, raise it up early in the morning, and the birds will come along and they'll go to fly through it, and they'll get stuck in the net, and you'll be eating birds for dinner.
Wow.
There's so many things you need to know, and you're not helping yourself by just pretending this isn't happening. You've got to realize this is happening. And even, let's say that pole shift never occurred. Can you see what's going on with the economies of the world? Can you see what's going on with politics and the news? I mean, this, we're living in a house of cards. Let's say that there's just worldwide riots and the governments collapse and the economy collapses. How are you going to survive? Well, I know, because I have a little hand drill, I've got all these maple taps, and I'm going to go out and tap all my maple trees, and I'm going to boil it down, and I'm going to have maple syrup, one of the best natural sources of calcium in the world.
Excellent. It lasts a long time, doesn't it, maple syrup?
Forever.
Yeah, because I've got a can, I think it's from the 1970s. It's that old, but it's still delicious, and... You know, it's
right.
From Canada.
And you can, good stuff. You can make maple candies. You know, anything that's pure sugar is pretty much going to last a long time. I mean, look, they put Twinkies under glass for like 30 years, and it looked the same as the day they put it in there.
Preserved with the sugar.
Christmas cupcakes. But anyway.
So, listen, we've got about 3 minutes, Gordon.
Right, and I just want to thank you for the opportunity to be able to just tell all of this. I hope I've been very interesting to your listeners, and I hope that I've gotten people excited about taking some steps to help themselves. But just remember this, you can't put 40 years worth of underwear away. You can't put 40 years worth of socks. You can go on the internet and learn how to make your own laundry detergent. Instead of using soap, which always leaves a bathtub ring, you can learn how to make detergent. And a 2-liter bottle of detergent cost me 15 cents to make. And how much does it cost if you go to the grocery store and you buy some laundry detergent? Can you imagine what's going to happen to you if you don't have laundry detergent for the next 40 years? If you can't wash your clothes, if you can't wash your hair, I mean, think about this stuff. You've got to think about it. And you know, if you're living in the city, how good is that going to be? You're going to be in a building where you and three other people, the only survivors, and then people from another building are going to come and cut you up and grill you? Cannibalism? I mean, you know what people are like. I wouldn't trust them as far as I could throw them. You have to be able to figure out how to survive on your own. And look, everyone isn't capable of doing that, but everyone has a skill. Some people can sit on the ground and tie up fishing nets, you know, while other people go out and evaporate seawater to get salt, and other people go hunting for deer. I mean, it's really... Everybody's going to have to work together in survival communities, and there's going to be no place for selfish people, none. And whether you have to shoot them, maybe just banishing them forever will be enough, but maybe it won't. There's going to be some hard spiritual choices. And when this happens, probably 2/3 of the earth is going to die instantly. Then you're going to have another 30% that's going to die from shock. There are going to be people wandering around because their whole world is gone. And you are the one that's going to have to say, look, we're working together. Now you go gather firewood. And you two over there, you're going to go down to the shore and see if you can find some undamaged cans of food. And you're going to bring them back. And you people are going to gather materials to create shelter. And for a long time, you'll be able to go down to the shore and stuff will be washed up 100 miles inland. All kinds of building materials. Mm. And you're going to have to a crowbar and a hammer. You're going to have to remove nails, straighten them out, take the wood and cut it and shape it into a new building. Maybe you won't have shingles, but you'll have a tarp. But you're going to have to think of food, clothing, shelter, and heat.
Gordon,
so.
Thank you. Gordon, James, Gianninotto, I finally...
9 hours of discussion, and I hope I convinced somebody.
Do you want another one? Do you want to go on tomorrow?
It's up to you.
Or are you spent? Maybe we should have some feedback. Can we do a feedback show tomorrow?
Yeah, I'd be glad to do it. What time would you like to do it?
So it's now the hour onwards. So it's It's this time tomorrow.
What are you saying? It was 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time for me tonight, so are you saying 7 to 9 tomorrow? What are you saying?
Let me roll the credits. We'll be back tomorrow with Journeys with JP. Thank you very much, everybody. This has been...
Okay, and if you have any questions or comments, please submit them so that we can ponder them tomorrow.
Yeah.
Possibly respond.
Thank you very much, Gordon.